Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Van Maren Show on LifeSiteNews.com. My name is Jonathan Van Maren, and today I'm going to be having an interesting discussion with my friend Manuela Steiner from Pro-Life Europe. Those who listen to the podcast regularly will recognize her name because we've had her on to talk about the work she's been doing in Europe before. They're a really fascinating organization that is setting up pro-life clubs on campuses all the way across Europe. They're in 10 countries right now and doing all kinds of outreach. They had me in to speak at the Austrian March for Life back in the age of travel, and I got to speak at one of their conferences, and it was so interesting to talk to pro-lifers from all over Western Europe, and so interesting to watch a youth movement that has been previously almost non-existent kind of come into being and to shake up these campuses where abortion has almost never been discussed. Well, as those of you who have listened to previous interviews know, Steiner's organization Pro-Life Europe is based out of Vienna. And Vienna is right now a hotspot of debates over mandatory vaccination and other COVID restrictions. Austrian politics has been in chaos. And I wanted to have Manuela back on the podcast to talk about how she does pro-life work in this environment, what things are looking like in her neck of the woods in Europe, whether she thinks that these mandates can be effectively combated, and how we do pro-life work anyways. How do we get that message through, and how does she stay optimistic or at least resolute in the face of all of these challenges? This is our conversation. All right, Manuel, you've been on the podcast before to talk about your work with Pro-Life Europe. So I want to get into that again in a minute. But first, I wanted to ask you how things are going in Austria right now, because I think all the listeners, regardless of where they live, are dealing with the pandemic and, more accurately, the restrictions placed on their lives, their livelihoods, and their freedom of movement by the government in response to the pandemic. What's it been like in Austria over the past half year or so?
Well, Jonathan, thanks for inviting me back. I'm very happy to talk to you tonight. So it's been a crazy time in Austria. I think we were one of the first Western countries, publicly speaking, about a vaccine mandate. And right now, all signs are going towards that this is going to happen on February 1st. And we are, I think, past lockdown number 4. And currently there is a lockdown for unvaccinated people. And the only thing you hear in the news are how many people get a positive test back, how many people are in the hospital, in care. And so the only topic you hear is the pandemic. And some of your listeners maybe have also heard that we have had a few interesting months with our political leaders. We have our third, I think, chancellor, so like the leader of our government, within 4 months, because Sebastian Kurz, whom some might know by name, had to leave the office. And then we had somebody for 2.5 months, and then somebody else took over. And so it was really, really crazy. There were some jokes on the internet of people saying, "I just went to the bathroom. Do we have a new government already?" So it's just crazy. I don't think that there have ever been times like this. There are also protests in the streets against the COVID restrictions and especially against the upcoming vaccine mandate every week in every major city, especially, of course, in Vienna, our capital. There are tens of thousands of people on the streets every Saturday, and you just feel a shift really in society. In every family, with every person I talk to, you have people being vaccinated and people not being vaccinated, and because of that, family members who stop talking with each other or haven't spent Christmas together a few weeks ago because I don't want unvaccinated people in my house, or I don't want vaccinated people in my house. And so Yeah, it's tough times for us here in Austria, just as for everybody else, I think.
I will admit that regardless of what anybody's opinion is on any of the issues, the idea that you would not see one of your loved ones, whether it be a family member or a friend, because of that, it actually like blows my mind. I can't wrap my head around it, right? Like, I've got friends and family who are both, and I could not care less. And I mean that very sincerely, right? Like, it's the idea that you would voluntarily ask for a vaccine passport or lack thereof at the door just honestly stretches my brain. Do you get any sense that all these protests, you say there is this shift, right? And people are being pitted against each other, which I think is just, it is so tragic. Do you sense that these protests are doing any good? Because it's easy when you're on, you know, Twitter or social media to see these videos of protests in Italy and France and Austria and the Netherlands and think, well, good, people are pushing back and they won't tolerate these coercive and suffocating restrictions for much longer. But do you get the sense that they're doing anything to actually avert the upcoming vaccine mandate?
From my perspective, I think no. I feel like our government, they're just going to push it through regardless of what's happening, even if I think half of our population would be on the streets one day, they would still push the law through. Also, they have, so like they had a first draft for the law regarding the vaccine mandate, and I think 100,000 people, which is with Austria having 8 million people living here, it's really a lot. 100,000 people gave statements on the official homepage of our parliament, where you also as an organization or as a private person, you can make a statement. What is your opinion for this law? And so many people wrote something. So many also doctors and scientists wrote something against the vaccine mandate. So many scientists are also speaking at rallies in Vienna, especially. It's no use. The government is going to push it through. There has also been a statement from our now government leader, Karl Nehammer, that they are expecting about a million of unvaccinated people then to file protest when the law has passed. And this would basically mean that our whole justice system is going to collapse. Because if the police, like on the street, if they meet me unvaccinated, they would be allowed to, I don't know the term in English now, but like I would have to pay a fine. And if I don't agree with it, I could go to the court. And they expect 1 million Austrians to do that. And that would mean that the whole system, like I said, our whole court system, our justice system would just collapse. And they know that now already. And they just, yeah, they agree that that's just going to happen. We're going to do it anyway.
It's so strange watching democratic nations without a democratic mandate for doing what they're doing to embark on this path, because it feels like they're playing chicken with their own populations in some ways. And I don't know. I don't. It's been very difficult. I keep track of a lot of different European politics. I'll admit that Austria has had me kind of boggled over the last couple of months. It's very hard to keep track of, and I'm not familiar with all the players, so it's very difficult to kind of wrap your head around what's happening. But the issue in Canada is we have no real conservative opposition to these coercive policies, and the province of Quebec, for example, just announced that they were essentially putting in mandatory vaccination. No other provinces have followed suit, but it's still early days, so I guess we'll see what happens. Do you have conservative political opposition? Like, are there politicians and leaders that you can rally behind in protest of these measures?
Yes, we have. I would say we have five bigger political parties, two of which are forming our government, and so three in opposition. And of those three, one is clearly speaking up against the vaccine mandate and all those measures and the crazy state basically our government is running our state into. And this party and their leader, maybe you have heard the name Herbert Kicker. They are really trying to stand up and also to motivate people to stand up and to not accept those changes that are coming towards us. But they are not one of the biggest parties. There have been also a few scandals involving their party within the last few years. So it's difficult. And also, I'm not sure how many people are now willing to support a party they would not have supported before the pandemic, just because of how they stand to the pandemic.
And that's interesting, because for pro-lifers in Canada, and I know elsewhere, but I can speak to what we've been working on here, is that during the pandemic, our government has put in some incredibly dangerous pieces of legislation, including a bill to ban so-called conversion therapy. They've expanded assisted suicide and euthanasia to those suffering from mental illness. They've also instituted bubble zones that are ostensibly to combat those that are protesting pandemic measures, but also obviously are aimed at pro-life, peaceful pro-life protesters who are seeking to provide other options to women seeking abortions. But it's the noise is so loud surrounding all these issues that it's almost impossible, in the political sphere at least, to kind of do your job in terms of getting traction on other social issues that are really important. And I know that you guys at Pro-Life Europe were working on a number of things prior to the pandemic. As most of the listeners will know, I've visited you guys in Austria. You guys have visited us in North America. So there's been a lot of communication between our various pro-life groups. Do you find that in this political climate, it's far more difficult to gain any traction on the issues you've committed your life to fighting in the first place?
Yes, definitely. I remember already 1.5 years ago, so basically in the beginning of the pandemic, a colleague got the reaction that we should not be speaking about abortion because we have bigger problems now. And for many people, especially in politics, that's still the same. If you come from a pro-life stance, the problem is, and I think that's just as you described also for Canada, the pro-choice side has somehow managed to much better use this time. There has been a huge shift, for example, in Germany. Germany has now a liberal left-wing government since about 2 months, and their governmental program for the next few years is, speaking from a pro-life point of view, devastating. It's terrible. Germany had a rather conservative law regarding abortion. They are prohibiting any advertisements for doctors, and they have a waiting period for a few days, and also they have much stricter regulations regarding abortions after the 12th week. And now the government wants to push everything away up until to have abortion legal maybe until birth. Their first step, one of the most important topics for this new government, is as a first step to allow doctors to advertise for abortions. So for us as the pro-life side, there was no room in politics, not at all, not in any country in Europe. But we have also had a few huge losses. Also in Austria, with the beginning of this year, we now have euthanasia, still in only a few cases, but yeah, the door is open. So another loss currently for our side.
One of the reasons, I think, is what we see is that the progressives are united in their approach to the pandemic, whereas our side has been not only divided, but because we are culturally entrenched and because we're fighting on so many different fronts with far more limited resources, because we don't have any of the government or elite institutions, it's far more difficult to allocate resources to fight these things. Because it's not just Austria and Germany, right? We're seeing the abortion pill become the norm in the United Kingdom, and they're pushing to make that permanent. Israel is considering removing their abortion committees, which, you know, their abortion rate has been cut in half over the last 30 years. It's been going down year over year, and now they're talking about removing one of the few barriers to abortion that did, in fact, exist there. And so you're very right. The abortion movement seems to have been able to utilize the pandemic to accelerate everything on their agenda and everything that they've been wanting. And it makes it a lot more difficult, especially politically, to do anything, because it's hard to marshal people behind a cause that nobody's thinking about right now, even though in many places the abortion rate has been steeply climbing during the pandemic, right? So we don't have good numbers for Canada, but the abortion rate has gone up in the United States for the first time in 25 years. The abortion rate spiked sharply in the United Kingdom. Israel, interestingly, which has good data, the abortion rate has gone down year over year, even during the pandemic. So that's a rare glimmer of good news. But what are you guys doing at Pro-Life Europe? What are you guys doing to somehow break through the noise? What kind of work is still being done on the ground, and how are you navigating all these restrictions?
As you probably remember, our focus was never the political side of the pro-life movement, but the cultural change. And we are simply trying to still reach as many people as possible, since many university campuses are on lockdown or simply only doing online courses. We have just had to shift to city centers wherever there was a time frame where we could talk with people. During summer, we had a door-to-door campaign running, simply knocking on people's doors and asking them about their opinion on abortion, because there was nowhere else to meet people. And interestingly enough, although many people are afraid of social contact, still many opened their doors and we could have lots of awesome discussions. And we are still working with as many students as we can to reach also their roommates, or get the courage to talk with their family members, which some of the listening active pro-lifers might know is much more difficult than to talk to a stranger on the street. And I'm still 100% sure, as we also see now, we are losing on the political sphere right now, but the change will be coming from the ground up, from society. And we still had the chance to have a March for Life in Berlin in September and in Vienna in October, where we were active, where we also had outreaches before to reach people, to also find new volunteers. And despite everything, we have been growing also in Pro-Life Europe. We have now over 30 groups in over 10 countries. And yeah, like I said, we are trying to find people to talk to wherever possible and whenever, not in lockdown.
It's interesting you put it that way, because although obviously if you're a social conservative in Canada, you're involved in political work to some degree, because this is a large country geographically, but quite small population-wise. But the group I work for, the Canadian Centre for Bioethical Reform, is also an educational group. And so we still managed to reach 4 million last year, which is not nearly as high as we had hoped 2 years ago. But we've adjusted our expectations. We've worked around restrictions, and we're still managing to see a tremendous number of people change their minds and cancel their abortions. But I said before that if you're not doing the sort of grassroots work that Pro-Life Europe does or that we do, it must be very depressing to go to work each day, because it seems like on the upper echelons of the culture war, when it comes to politics, it's really, really difficult to make any headway. And that was one of the things I wanted to ask you. When you're taking a look at everything that's going on, do you get the sense that something has to snap? Because when you talk about a million people flooding the justice system, or just let's just say like a million people who won't comply with something that's mandatory, right? You can marginalize 10,000 people. Maybe you can marginalize 50,000 people. You can't marginalize a million people, right? Even in Canada, if only 10% stay unvaccinated, you can't marginalize millions of people. It just simply doesn't work. So it feels like at some point they have to pay the piper. At some point they have to realize that coercion will only get them so far. Do you have any sense of what happens after that? Because when you are living through a time of great upheaval, there's great risk and great cost, but there also potentially is shifts in paradigm, like you mentioned, people voting for parties they'd never vote before. And there can be these undercurrents and changes that we don't fully see until the dust settles. Do you have any optimism for something like that happening?
I'm honestly not sure, because even though I totally agree with you saying you can marginalize millions of people, but on the other hand, the majority is pro-government and pro-vaccine mandate and pro-restrictions. And if now, especially in Austria, they are pushing it and pushing it and pushing it, the official media is only telling this narrative. And so if now the government would shift, I think they would risk betraying or creating this feeling of immense betrayal in the vast majority of the population, which then could lead to an even bigger uprising, I think. So
what you're referring to, I've been talking about this for a while, it's the fallacy of sunk cost. Like once you've committed to a narrative and you've sunk a certain amount into that narrative, to change your tune at some point is to risk your position, certainly. It's to end your political career, almost certainly. And it's to create a backlash. But that backlash could be political if they would simply step aside for the good of the country, which, of course, politicians generally don't do. But what I find interesting, and of course, this is all speculation, it's just interesting to talk to you about this, is that with the Omicron variant, which is far more infectious, but far, far, far more mild, right? A lot of people can't distinguish it from a cold who are getting it. And I know a whole bunch of people have had it. You're kind of in this scenario where the CEO of Pfizer says that the current vaccine doesn't work against Omicron. So what happens then, right? Does a vaccine mandate come in and then it's mandatory, the new one is mandatory, right? Because the situation is changing so quickly that it's so difficult for any set of solid facts to remain solid for longer, you know, than a month or two, which is why I wonder why the governments are making these massive commitments and stating things with such certainty, when the only thing that seems obvious is that the situation is very fluid.
Actually, my first thought, so I think in the beginning of November was when the Austrian government first started talking about the vaccine mandate. And my first thought was, if they are announcing it now, 3 months ahead, it's not going to come, because that's so much time for them to make a big announcement and prepare everything. And I don't know, at the end of January, then to tell the population, well, we did reach our goal number of vaccinated people. So surprise, we don't need the mandate anymore. Everything is over. Maybe that's going to happen. Maybe, like you said, with Omicron, it's going to change. So far, from what I see, at least in Austria, the mainstream media is not telling what you just said. So the mainstream media is only saying that it's far more infectious, but it's not saying that it's less dangerous. And many, many people, I really have to say from my experience, the vast majority of the population has about 0.5% of information what's happening around the world. I have let alone spoken with so many people who got vaccinated who didn't even know that the vaccines only had an exceptional, so that they were,
you mean they had limited efficacy, right? They didn't fully protect you from the Delta variant.
No, the European Union, like the committee who is saying when to accept the new.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You mean that it didn't go through the full approval process?
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Yes, yes, yes.
So many people got vaccinated and had never heard that. So that's information that is affecting them personally because they got the vaccine and they didn't even have this information. So many people really have no idea from a bigger picture what's happening.
One of the reasons I've said so little about the pandemic is I've been trying to think through it. I've been trying to do my research. It's really difficult to tell which sets of information are accurate. And also information which is accurate one day is very frequently not accurate later. And when it comes to how this all plays out, which I'm not asking you to prophesy, I don't know either. I just like to talk to other people who are living through it, especially when, you know, you're living through it in a different country, but you're also in the same business as I am, so to speak. And so your perspective is very interesting to me. From a historical perspective, it's an interesting period just because there's this collision of all these different forces. And I don't think there's any guarantee of which way that it swings. But when you're looking at the issue that we both really focus on, is there any opportunity that pro-lifers are missing? Because you mentioned earlier on that when it comes to the pandemic, the pro-abortion side seems to have been able to utilize the opportunity far more effectively than the pro-life movement has. And of course, there's a whole bunch of reasons for that, not to mention the fact that the pro-life movement is divided on a lot of these measures. But is there any opportunity that you think that we're missing that we could begin to take advantage of?
Currently, it's very difficult. I think right now we just have to push through and show that whatever restrictions we have, we are still working for the unborn children and for their mothers. But I think if really the system collapses, if really politicians say that they did wrong and that there will be some major shift in politics, I think that would be a good opportunity for us to then to really speak up and saying politicians have been wrong here, but there is an even much bigger worker field where politicians have done wrong, and that's protection of unborn life and protection of life in total. Because I think maybe then this would be a moment for people to think openly and critical. And that, I think, will be where we have to stand up. Because also I think for some sphere, at least, for those people I said before who are going to feel betrayed and alone, if the system they believed in collapses, we will also give them halt and stability back.
That makes a lot of sense, because there is an unprecedented opportunity for pro-lifers, for social conservatives, and more fundamentally for Christians to speak truth into this total period of chaos. And what we are seeing right now is a lot of gods that failed, as the famous philosopher once put it, right? We're seeing all of these saviors and these false gods put forward as, you know, the way out of confusion, the way out of certainty, uncertainty, the way out of pandemic. And each and every one of them, regardless of your position on vaccination and government overreach and all those kinds of things, what is very obviously true is that none of them are what we've been sold them as, right? None of them actually are accomplishing the role of savior. And that's simply because all of them are gods that failed. And one of the reasons I've often thought that pro-lifers specifically are so suspicious of government is because we know that they're lying about some of the most obvious things you can imagine, right? I've gone through, you know, the dumpsters behind abortion clinics. I've held dead babies in my hand. And when you have that sensory memory of what it feels like to hold a baby corpse in your hands, and then to know that the government day in, day out, our prime minister, our Health Canada website is telling us it's not a baby, it's just a clump of cells, it's nothing, it's reproductive health care. You start to think, well, this is all BS, right? If they're willing to lie to me about that, then it just gives you an inherent distrust in your approach to what they have to say about all kinds of different things. But there's also an opportunity when distrust of government mounts to present a point of view and say, if you think it's egregious that they're saying this, you know, wait till you hear how many babies they killed yesterday, right? And I don't mean that flippantly. Sometimes I think that all of these things that are going on, we can't take our eyes off what I think is the greatest injustice in modern human history, which is the destruction of tens of millions of innocent human beings in the womb every year.
Yeah, agreed 100%. And also with this whole pandemic, I mean, it did emphasize the importance of one human's life. I mean, we went into the first lockdown last year with the idea it's worth me giving up all my freedom to save another person's life. And this is the whole narrative they are creating during this pandemic. And yes, I agree 100%. But just yesterday, I talked with a friend of mine who's studying medicine. And the World Health Organization's numbers are out for last year's causes of death. 42% of all deaths last year were caused by abortion. 42. So I agree. I am willing to sacrifice a lot for other humans' life, but we have to start at the beginning of life. So let's continue this course and let's work on those 42%.
It's made me think a lot in the past year or two as you watch sort of the entire Western world and elsewhere in turmoil. I remember somebody wrote a couple of years ago that you can't have war in the womb and peace on the streets. And interestingly, when you see this view put forward by governments that to save a few, we need to lock down all society. Now, I'm not going to debate that premise. Just for a minute, I'll state their premise. It's a fundamentally Christian assumption that the vulnerable have value and are worthy of protection in the first place. But what you have are secular and in some cases pagan governments using Christian premises, but it's without a Christ, without an actual savior, without God. And now we're seeing all these false gods get put up and they're all failing. And instead we're sort of wrecking civilization around us. And it doesn't appear that there's an end in sight. Because, you know, we're in our fourth or fifth lockdown. I don't remember anymore. And you said you might be heading into your fifth. So it's interesting the extent to which the pandemic is accelerating all previous trends, but is also kind of exposing a lot of the massive gaping philosophical fallacies of our culture.
Agreed 100%. And I think it's easiest to see that in, for example, Germany and Austria, during the pandemic, euthanasia was introduced.
Yeah, no, some of the most schizophrenic and insane things that have come out around euthanasia have been during the pandemic, right? Like in Germany, the news that you might have to be fully vaccinated before you're eligible for euthanasia. Or the news recently out of New Zealand that there's the potential that COVID-19 patients can be. In Canada, they expanded it to people with mental illness just as they confirmed that there will be a mental health pandemic after this one, well, whenever this is over, right? That the impact of the lockdowns, the restrictions on the loss of businesses, on the kids being kept home from school, etc. And now the government's providing a service where, you know, they can take their despair to the government and get a lethal injection to so-called cure it. So it is really staggering to watch how they're, you know, putting people to sleep like aging household pets, but don't seem to understand what the implications of their actions are. Or maybe they do. That's of course, the worst possible analysis.
But again, I really think us, like you said, us pro-lifers, we had this feeling of distrust into politics before. And I really think there will be this time where we can be a safe anchor for those people for the other part of society waking up.
Just so we can sign off on a positive note for all the listeners, because I think a lot of our listeners spend a lot of time doom scrolling. I just like to kind of talk through what the metaphysical and other implications of the pandemic are. But you guys do a lot of grassroots work. We released our newsletter at CCBR over Christmas, and so many people were so encouraged by all the glimmers of hope that the grassroots pro-life movement provides by persuading women not to kill their children, by changing people's minds, by transforming the worldviews of many of our peers, even during these dark times. So maybe to close this interview off, share a couple of the encouraging good news stories that Pro-Life Europe has experienced over the last 6 months.
Yeah, I'm glad to do. Like I said, so despite the pandemic and despite our difficulties reaching our peers, being active in universities, we still could found a few new groups. So we are now counting 34 active groups in 10 countries in Europe. We are getting more and more active in German universities, which also brings more and more difficulties with other German universities. So we have now, I think, 4 officially registered groups. Just to remember, since Europe has different law systems in every country, Germany is one of the few countries on the European continent that allows such a thing as an official university group, like in, I think, all of Northern America is a very typical thing. We are, with a very high chance, risking our first lawsuit against one German university in Wuppertal, which I think will also be a very, very important step for us, not only to have the courage to take this, but this might be an interesting case for us to really openly and publicly talk about freedom of speech on universities, on university campuses, and freedom of opinion at universities. And so this university, they have declined our first attempt to register the group. And this is going to be an interesting development for us within the next few months. We also have a few awesome new team members. We have been blessed with really dedicated, motivated new people being great additions to our team. It has been a year of a lot of ups and downs, but I think it has made us much, much stronger also within. In just a few months' time, in March, we will celebrate our 3rd birthday, which is still, we're still a very young organization, struggling also with finding our ways within. But all those hardships, all the problems with the quarantine, with COVID, but also just with us being humans and making mistakes, had us grow stronger. I think it's interesting, and it's also, of course, humbling to be put to live through these times. But as a Christian, I am grateful, because my life is being led by the Lord, and I want to take action, and I want to do my part in the times God has put me. And yeah, so I'm grateful for every hardship and every failure, and also even more, of course, for all the smaller and bigger successes.
Final question, Manuela, where can our listeners find your work?
You can find us online. Of course, we have our own website. It's easy to remember. It's prolifeeurope.org. And we are very active on Instagram and Facebook. Instagram might be very interesting, because there not only we as an organization have our own channel, but also most of our groups. So you see content from us as an organization, but you always also see pictures from our groups where they are active. For example, yesterday was an outreach in Munich. So just Google pro-life, Munich, pro-life, Wien. So the German names, mostly also pro-life Helsinki. And once you find one of our organizations, you should get the others also to see, and then you can follow not us, only us as an organization, but our groups directly.
Thank you so much for taking the time to have this discussion.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was my conversation with Manuela Steiner of Pro-Life Europe. Thank you so much for joining us for this show this week. If you want to check out past shows or subscribe to future shows, please head over to lifesitenews.com, click on the podcast tab. You'll find the Van Maren Show there, and you'll find us on any platform where you get your podcast content. Once again, thank you so much for listening, and we do hope you'll join us again next week.